what's going on out there at V's After Dark Radio Land. And you know what time it is when it's a Thursday, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on blogtalkradio.com/ Ms. V, the Toy Lady. It's time for another exciting edition of the quickest hour in sports talk radio, which is Let's Talk About Sports here on V's After Dark Radio. And of course, I am your host, the man himself, James Acevedo. Ms. V will not be joining us this week as we speak. She is attending a Lions season ticket holder get-together, meeting some sort of the players and stuff like that. I know they're unveiling the Detroit Lions jersey, some sort of jersey. I don't know if it's an alternate jersey or it's going to be their new home jersey, road jersey. Deep down, because, you know, I'm a New York Giants fan. As a New York Giants fan, I don't care. But hopefully she is having a good time with herself and with her daughter. If I'm not mistaken, they're both there together. So I'll be holding it down. Now, will you be surprised if she will call in like she's done in the past when she hasn't been on the show because she was taking care of other things she had to take care of? No, it would not surprise me. I don't remember the last time I did a show. This show on my own without her at least calling in. Even if she had something she had to do, she always find a way to chime in on the air for a couple of minutes or so. So I will not be surprised. But you people who are listening, you could chime in right now for the next hour. Matter of fact, to be specific, the next 58 minutes on the dot, you could talk to me with you have any questions or comments about sports. The number is 646-716-8041. The number again, 646-716-8041. And if you press 1, that means you want me to pick up your phone call and allow you to talk and ask me a question or a comment. If you don't press 1, you're just going to be listening in, which that's fine too. But if you're really shy, the chat room is going to be open right now as we speak. So if you want to, if you're a little shy, you want to chat in the chat room instead of calling in, that's fine too. I'm opening up the chat room as we speak, as I talk about real quickly what's been going on. Excuse me. Where to start with? Well, first, before I move on, I want to take this time for the next minute to send my condolences to the Murphy family. What am I talking about? Well, at least you've been living underneath a rock for the past 28 hours or so. Charlie Murphy, the older brother of Eddie Murphy, a comedian, an actor, a stand-up comedian, obviously, and an actor. He died yesterday with leukemia. This is one of the most stunning deaths since almost a year ago with Prince, which, by the way, we're approaching Prince's one-year anniversary of his death, and just, I think, next week, matter of fact, coming up next week, it'll be already 1 year, which is astounding. And I was at the Yankee game yesterday, which I'll talk about real briefly in a few minutes, with my lady, and I happened to look on my social media page, more specifically, it was on Instagram, and I saw my cousin posting that Charlie Murphy died, and I couldn't believe it. I was, like, stunned. And not only was I stunned, but what he died of. And I had no idea he had any form of leukemia whatsoever. I mean, not to my knowledge. I don't remember him ever bringing it up, whether he was, you know, doing his act or doing appearances on radio stations. So I was just stunned. He was only 57 years old. He was in a lot of, you know, appearances. A lot of people don't realize, that the first time I ever knew of him, he actually was a body double for Eddie Murphy in that Coming to America movie, which came out in 1989. He actually was Eddie Murphy's double when Eddie Murphy would play all those characters he did on Coming to America, where it was the barber or the Jewish guy, or, you know, I forgot all the other characters he played, along with Arsenio Hall played, but when it came to Eddie Murphy's characters, Charlie Murphy would play his double as the prince. Like, they would film him to the side or something to make, you know, because he, feature-wise, if you look from the nose up, he looks just like Eddie Murphy. Except, you know, Charlie Murphy was a real street dude. He didn't mess with Charlie Murphy. The one thing I love about Charlie Murphy, very briefly, is that he was a real guy. He was funny as hell. I mean, I knew him before he even blew up on Dave Chappelle. Like I said, he played a body double in Coming to America. The first time I ever saw his face in a movie, to my knowledge, I remember, was The Players Club, and that was like over, what, 20 years ago when that movie came out? The Players Club, that had Bernie Mac, who's been left us for a while, unfortunately, and other well-known people in that movie, which for some reason, like, the name just don't come up in my head. But that's the first time I remember seeing him on film. I don't remember if he had a line in that movie, but he wasn't, he had no credit in the movie, to my knowledge. He wasn't like, you know, a well-known person yet at the time. It wasn't until years later when Dave Chappelle practically gave him a platform when he told his Charlie Murphy Hollywood stories, you know, when it came to Rick James and Prince. I mean, that put him in through the stratosphere as a household name after that, even though I knew him years before that, you know, at least 15 plus years before that. It was just good to know that he was able to achieve some sort of success, and he was out of the shadow of his brother, because obviously everyone knew him as, oh, there he goes, Eddie Murphy's brother, Charlie Murphy. And within the last, I would say, the last 14, 15 years of his life, he wasn't just known as Eddie Murphy's brother. He was known as Charlie Murphy, the comedian. And he's been, the last few years, doing tours, the comedy tour with these great group of comedians are George Lopez, D.L. Hughley, Eddie Griffin, who I freaking love. I mean, Eddie Griffin, one of the most underrated stand-up comedians ever. And also Cedric the Entertainer, I think, is part of that. I think it is Cedric part of that group also. If I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong. Let's see, Eddie Griffin, George Lopez, D.L. Hughley, definitely Charlie Murphy. I could be wrong about Cedric the Entertainer. I could have sworn Cedric the Entertainer is part of that group also. And I can only imagine what they're going through. And more importantly, the family, Eddie Murphy. I mean, Jesus Christ. He's the younger brother. Charlie Murphy was the older brother. And I can only imagine what he's going through and his family, his sons, going through right now. The only silver lining to his death is that about 4 or 5 years ago, I know his wife died suddenly also, and she had some sort of disease or something, and that was horrible that he had to go through that. So, you know, silver lining, you know, knowing that there's a heaven somewhere, I'm just glad that they're able to be able to reunite in heaven. And not only that, he'll be able to be reunited with Rick James and Prince. And they can reenact the TV sketch in the Dave Chappelle show. So in all seriousness, rest in peace. I had to at least take a few minutes to talk about that, about Charlie Murphy. Anybody doesn't know, also, Charlie Murphy obviously was born and raised in Brooklyn. Then they eventually moved out to Roosevelt in Long Island. So he was a dude that was not to be messed with. He was in gangs. He was a street dude. Definitely total opposite 180 of what Eddie Murphy was. It was just great stories about how what Eddie Murphy didn't want during, you know, through the years of his stardom, that's when his brother, Charlie Murphy, would take advantage of as far as drugs or certain groupies and stuff like that. So, you know, he was just not only a cool, mad, real person, but he wasn't a great comedian, but he was a definitely great storyteller. He was definitely not like his brother. Totally two different opposites when it comes to stand-up. Charlie Murphy was just a great storyteller, which made him more appealing. And, of course, him being part of the Dave Chappelle show back, you know, in the early 2000s, what really made him really popular, more to the fact that he was just Eddie Murphy's brother. And at one point, he was Eddie Murphy's bodyguard way back in the day, you know, when Eddie Murphy was doing the Delirious tour and the Raw tour a few years later. And he couldn't do that no more because he kept beating people up, certain people that didn't laugh at Eddie Murphy's jokes. It's just hilarious just hearing those stories. And it just sucks because he was only 57. He was still, you know, he should have had way more years to live on this planet. And I just want to send my condolences and prayers to the Murphy family and his friends. And, you know, rest in peace. I'll be talking more about that on my show tomorrow on the Bench Warmers Live Show, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, of course. I'm definitely going to do a tribute. I'll play one of his, obviously, his funniest stories he ever told on Dave Chappelle's show, among other things. And, yeah, I will definitely do that. It seems like for the last couple of years, it's like, it seems like almost every week I do a memoriam about somebody well known in the entertainment industry, whether it's music or acting or comedian or whatever. So rest in peace to Charlie Murphy. Now moving right along. Certain things that I want to keep this local since we only have 49 minutes and 23 seconds, but who's counting? You know, since this is the quickest hour in sports, me and Ms. V usually stay local to our sports, whether it's me in New York or Ms. V in Detroit. Sometimes we take a national sports story if it's something that really is important to talk about. So I want to go with this when it comes to my side of it, as far as the New York City side. Okay, everyone knows the NBA season's over, and what a shock the Knicks didn't make the playoffs. For the third year in a row, the Knicks lost either 50 or more games in the season. Embarrassing. This year, their record was 31-51. Bravo. 13th seed in the Eastern Conference. Very proud of themselves. Here's some of the things recently that's happened in the last couple of days that bothers me as a Knicks fan. So let's be honest. You notice within the last, I would say, 5 months. I would say, maybe 4 months. I haven't said a peep about the Knicks, especially on this show. Maybe a little more on my own Benchwarmers Live show, but definitely not as much on this show. And there's a reason why, because the Knicks have been irrelevant for the longest time. They were irrelevant since, to be honest, they were irrelevant to me since December. Matter of fact, they started to be irrelevant when Derrick Rose went AWOL that one time. When he did that, that was the beginning of the end to this Knicks season. When he just went AWOL, and we all know why he went AWOL, because those last two games before he went AWOL, the coach sat him down the last two games before he went AWOL, and that's why he had a hissy fitty and he jetted the way he did back to Chicago, where he's originally from. And he made up some story that, oh, something was going on with his mother, da da da. First of all, to lie something like that about your mom, I mean, ain't that, you know, to wish, you know, you were saying like, oh, something was going on with my mom. You know, you should make a lie like that, because one day that's going to happen for real. So you shouldn't, you know, lie something of that nature when it comes to that type of lie. So, you know, that and Joakim Noah, let's be honest, the biggest joke, who, by the way, is going to go through rotator cuff surgery. So this genius Phil Jackson, which I'm going to get to a minute, another story about Phil Jackson, who got this guy, which I'm going to be honest, I wanted him here. I did. It's not like I was like, I didn't want Joakim Noah here. I wanted him here because at least he brought that energy to the floor. He was that guy, that no-nonsense type of guy, a guy that kind of reminds you of maybe the 90s Knicks, like a Charles Oakley or Xavier McDaniel or, you know, John Starks. You know, these type of players, Larry Johnson in the later 90s, you know, these type of players that didn't take no crap from nobody. Well, as soon as Joakim Noah came here, there was, you know, he didn't play as much. He got injured. He didn't, when they had Veterans Week to play homage to Veterans Week, he didn't want to wear the official NBA Veterans Day celebration socks. There was some event for veterans. Actually, it was at the Army University, you know, at West Point, if I'm not mistaken, in New York, the Army Academy. He didn't want to go to there. Something with Joakim Noah, something with him and military he don't like. I don't know what's his beef with Joakim Noah with military, but it seems like he has no respect for the military, which gets under my skin because as a former, you know, military person myself, although I only did 2 years in the military as a in the U.S. Navy, I take offense to that, especially people that have risked their lives for our freedom, and yours truly did that also. Goes on. This guy, Phil Jackson, gave him a 4-year contract worth over $70 million, something like that. The first year is down the toilet, $18 million down the toilet. Now you have him with rotator cuff surgery, where they say he'd be lucky to come back within 6 to 8 months, which means he'll be off the court even into the next, you know, 2017-2018 season. So you'd be lucky if he comes back January, February next year in 2018. So that's a mistake compared with Derrick Rose, who, again, Derrick Rose was somebody I wanted here too. I thought it was a good move. I thought it was no lose situation because he was going to be here for a year, and if he played well, then you would probably sign him to a multi-million dollar contract. He played good. He didn't play great. He didn't get injured a lot, but once he did that A-roll thing, like I just told you a few minutes ago, that's where he lost me, and that's where the Knicks season went down the toilet. Then came the Charles Oakley thing, incident, which we've talked about here a few times. And then there was another incident not too long ago, I think it was last week, that the owner, this idiot, James Dolan, had an argument with some fan in the street, a lawyer, mind you. Ironic. A guy in his 30s, whatever. And the lawyer basically told James Dolan he sucked as an owner. And Dolan got into a verbal spat with him. And make a long story short, he made sure that he found out that this guy was actually he was going to the Knicks game, this guy, this lawyer, that was got into the verbal dispute with James Dolan, who was coming out of a taxi cab. That's how he bumped into him. And there was a verbal exchange in the street, probably a lot of expletives, obviously. And come to find out, James Dolan found out that this man that got into a verbal spat with him was a season ticket holder for the Knicks. He made sure, after that verbal confrontation, that he would be banned from the Garden. Now, okay, there's two ways about this that I could see both sides of it. Now, nobody in their life don't want anybody to come at them out of nowhere, especially, if you're a regular person, that's rarely that happens. But if you're a public person, certain things might happen that way. It doesn't matter who you are, whether you're a team owner, a well-known actor, a musician, whatever, or definitely a sports athlete, and you go into some other rival city or something like that. On the other side, I could see a little bit, I could understand where he's coming from a little bit, only because who needs to hear all that garbage? You're minding your own business, you're coming out of the cab, and some guy comes out of nowhere telling you you suck. Now, you could easily just walk away, say, okay, whatever. He has a right to voice whatever he wants to voice as long as you don't touch me. And that's always been my rule. My rule, although certain things when, some person could say something to set your nerves off of whack, that you just go right back at them. Depends how it's said, how the context or the way, the tone of the comment, whatever. Because most of the time you would just leave, But it depends. They say something about your family, something like that, then all bets are off, But the main thing always with me is that you can say whatever you want about me. It's a fair game. We live in a free country. But if you touch me, all bets are off. Then you're just asking for your ass getting kicked. I'm just saying. I'm not saying I'm a world beater. I'm just saying you put your hands on me, you're going to get hurt. I'm just saying. I might not kick your butt. I'm just saying you might get hurt. So I can understand why he felt like, why would I want this person into my facility, because he owns Madison Square Garden also, besides only the Knicks. I won't want that. And it goes back to the Charles Oakley incident too, because he basically banned Charles Oakley temporarily for a few days because of what happened in the Garden, which, like I said before, I think he knew all along Oakley was there. He wouldn't act like he wasn't there. He never liked Charles Oakley because of all the things he said to the Knicks about the Knicks organization, specifically about him, James Dolan, didn't like all those other years when he talked bad about him. So this was his perfect opportunity to get rid of him. Now, what happened after the fact, and Charles Oakley kept going blah, 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 and James Dolan was smart enough for once to shut up, Oakley looked bad. So then that was on Oakley. Now Oakley's finally shut up, finally, after, a month. But he's been quiet the last 2 or 3 weeks, I would say. So, but on the other guy, now the other person's point of view, the guy who got into a dispute with James Dolan in the middle of the street, he's a fan. I don't know if he's a diehard Knicks fan, but he's definitely a paying patron, as they say, in the business. He has every right to cheer and boo anybody. And my only rule is that as long as you don't put your hands on that person. You can say anything you want. And to go against Dolan a little bit when it comes to this situation, you're a public figure. You're known, especially more known in New York City, that you're James Dolan, the owner of Madison Square Garden, MSG Network, the freaking cable, well, it used to be Cablevision, now it's Optimum, whatever it is, not Optimum, whatever, and you own Madison Square Garden. So I think you're pretty well known here in the five boroughs of New York City. You there's a give and take. You know there's going to be some people that just don't like you, whether it's how you handle the links or whatever. Doesn't matter. Or people just see whatever it is. So you have to understand that someone's going to come at you a certain way, and you got to be prepared to always be on your toes. Like I said, it's ironic that it was a lawyer because, you know, he probably was looking to get James Dolan to punch him in the face, and that way he could sue him automatically. How ironic that would have been. a lawyer getting a part of that. You know how certain people, they want to push certain people so they can, you know, not only get their 15 minutes of fame, but trying to get some money out of it. You know, and once these people rightfully or wrongfully, you know, punch someone out because they said something stupid or they touched them, you know, they put their hands on them in a way, that's when they, I want to sue. But anyway, on Dolan's side, like I said, you should know it comes with the territory of you being a public figure. You know there's going to be people out there where there's weirdos, whatever, they're going to try to come at you, and you just have to always be on your toes. So you could have easily just got out of the cab, walked in the garden, whatever. He wants to say that, whatever. I don't care. I got his money. Who gives a crap? That's what he could have done. But obviously, whether James Dolan had a bad day that evening, I don't know. He got into underneath his skin, and he went back at the patron. So that's one of the things, and he banned the guy, which, like I said, I see both sides of it. But if I had to make an observation, a final decision, banning him is silly. You know, it's stupid. It's not smart business anyway. You know, it's not like, okay, it's not like the guy started a riot in the garden or something. That's a different story. Then he should be banned for life. But if you just had a verbal dispute with the guy, and he started the verbal dispute, obviously, and he called you all types of names in the book, you know, let that go. Forget it. All right, you had your – act like a man. You said your piece back at him, and whatever. Don't ban the guy. I mean, you know, he's the owner. He can do what he wants. He has every right to do what he wants. But, that, you know, you could have chilled on that. You know, like I said, I can understand how certain people can get on your nerves. So that's the only thing I can understand coming from James Dolan's point of view. But the ban the guy, I mean, come on. That's a little wussy. I'm just saying, that's a little, you know, be a man. Okay, you said your piece. He said his piece. All right, you both move on. That's it. Bottom line, he's coming into your building, spending his money that's going to your pocket. So who's the winner here? I'm just saying. You are, Dolan. So don't ban the guy. It's stupid. It's stupid. Then you risk upon him being a lawyer, you risk upon probably being sued now, you doing that. I'm just saying. Like I've always said, I don't think James Dolan's the brightest bulb in the bunch. He just fell into his daddy's fortune and not really been one of the greatest businessmen of all time, let's put it that way. Now we come to this part where, you know, Phil Jackson, who's been the president of basketball operations for the past 3 years. 3 years where they have lost over 150 games. 150 games and has won, what, not even 50? Out of those last 3 years. No, they won probably about, if I had to guess, about maybe 70 games in 3 years, which is horrible. Freaking the Golden State Warriors, in the last 3 years, they've won 65-plus games, which is the first team in NBA history. The last three seasons, they've averaged 65 wins, where the Knicks have averaged over 50 losses. You can't make it up, but anyway. So if you remember where James Dolan made this deal with Phil Jackson, which was in the middle of a season over 3 years ago, if I had to remember when it was, I think it was during, if I had to bet on it, I think it was during the 2013-2014 season. I could be wrong. I think it was more the 2014-2015 season that it happened. That he signed a deal, you know, 5 years later, because it happened during like a Christmas holiday in 2013, whatever it was, 2014, and they met at a party somewhere in the West Coast. You know, Dolan and Phil Jackson. He got him to agree to be the basketball president of basketball operations for the Knicks. And let's be honest, he is the GM. Not this other guy. I forgot his name. That's how much, you know, he's so well known. He's just a puppet figure for Phil Jackson. He's just there to look good in front of the cameras to make the Knicks look good. I forgot the guy's name. But let's be honest. The last 3 years, Phil Jackson has been a bust. He's been a joke. He has done things. Okay, he got us a homeboy, the tall dude. I can't believe I got his name. Porzingis. We got him. But he fell to our lap. It wasn't like he scouted him and he got the diamond out of the rough or something like that. He just happened to fall on our lap and we got lucky. Now, this year he didn't play so well. He did for the first few weeks and then he just fell flat on his ass and then he got hurt and stuff like that. And the rest is history. He's made moves where it looked good on paper, like a Derrick Rose or even getting Joakim Noah or trying to get these other certain players, Hasn't worked. They haven't had one winning season since. They haven't had a winning season since going back to, I think it was the 2013-2014 season, if I'm mistaken. They haven't won nothing. They haven't done nothing. Think about it. They've only had one playoff series win since 2001, if I'm not mistaken. That's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. And why I'm getting all wild up is because in the Phil Jackson's contract, it was a 5-year contract. But only the first 3 years are guaranteed. The last 2 years of that 5-year deal was a team option, which means that it was up to James Dolan to have that contract to be continued to be valid. It wasn't a Phil Jackson option. It was a team option, which means in the 3 years he didn't like what was going on here. Every right to tell Phil Jackson, okay, I'm buying you out. Thank you for your time. Adios. He didn't do that. He actually, James Dolan, picked up the option of the remaining 2 years of the 5-year deal. That is mind-boggling. How do you reward to continue this contract? You picked up the team option for the next, like, to make the last 2 years guaranteed to complete the 5-year contract. What the hell have you seen, James Dolan, that there's any remote possibility that the Knicks are going to be contenders in the NBA? Where have you seen this? Where? Like I said, the last 3 years under your watch, 50 losses or more, between 50 and 55 losses. Does that sound successful to you? First year alone, you only won like 18 games, whatever it was, on the first year. Embarrassing. That's how we got Porzingis in the first place. And we got to have the sixth pick. Mind you, it didn't help. Let's rewind a little bit. Yesterday was the last game of the season. You know the Idiots won the game? Where if they would have lost the game, that would have been more ping-pongs for their chances of being higher in the NBA draft this coming next couple of weeks? Asinine. And then there was one point the Knicks were considering not playing Carmelo Anthony on the last game of the season. And it happened to be a Madison Square Garden. Why the hell would you bench him? Why? It's not like we're resting for the playoffs. Why the hell you would do that? Eventually, obviously, they changed their mind because, you know, people started to get, you know, like pissed off, you know, blowing up social media, you know, knocking on doors and doors and saying, hey, idiot. Hey, Phil Jackson, idiot. What are you doing? Now, to James Dolan's credit, when it comes to this deal, he has made the promise and kept it. He hasn't meddled in Phil Jackson's business whatsoever. This is why Phil Jackson don't mind staying here. And I remember when we first got him, because I remember it was during the middle of the season of our horrible season, one of our horrible seasons, underachieving as usual. I was like, all right, this is a good move. Now, we all know he had no experience being an NBA executive, but let's see what happens now, because I go back to the 90s where I always thought that Phil Jackson was a very good coach, but he would never make a good executive, because I don't see him as the type of guy that could take a team from the ground up and make them contenders. Pat Riley did that, not only as a coach, but as an executive. Pat Riley did that here in Madison Square Garden with the Knicks when he first came on the scene in 1991-92 season. He took them to the playoffs that year. He took the Chicago Bulls, the defending NBA champions, with Michael Jordan, Horace Grant, Scottie Pippen, Bill Cartwright, all these guys at the time, to a seventh game in Chicago. Had them played their asses off. Made them respectable, Pat Riley. They were big-time, serious NBA championship contenders from the moment Pat Riley came in there until he left. And even after he left, Van Gundy still made them still respectable. But it was because of Pat Riley and his leadership that the reason why the Knicks became the way they are. They were a force in the NBA in the 90s. They didn't win nothing, but they went to two finals, one with Pat Riley, one with Jeff Van Gundy. Jeff Van Gundy was different because it was a short season. We all know about the lockout, blah, 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 the 1999 season. 99-2000 season. No, I'm sorry, the 98-99 season. Was it 98-99 season? Yeah, 98-99 season. Because the season didn't start till February 99 that year because of the NBA lockout. So it was like the first couple of months there was no basketball. But nonetheless, I digress. I always said Pat Riley was not only a better coach than Phil Jackson, but a better executive. And Pat Riley, as a coach and an executive, build teams from the ground up. He did that with the Knicks. He did that with the Heat. Even before LeBron James fell into their lap, he won a title with Dwayne Wade and Shaquille O'Neal. Okay? He built them from the ground up. They were contenders even though, well, that one year with the three, you know, the 97 was just a joke with that bull crap fight, you know, people getting suspended. You know, the Heat just basically, you know, took advantage of that situation. And then the following year happened again with Larry Johnson and Alonzo Mourning. And that all happened. And then we got the advantage in that one, luckily, because Alonzo Mourning got suspended. So there was no big man in the middle. And the rest was history. And then we kept beating the Heat the next three times in the playoffs after that. But my point is Phil Jackson made the Heat still competitive after all that. As we all knew, the Knicks were a better team than he at that point, but Pat Riley made the Knicks competitive. And then when he finally drafted Dwayne Wade, got Shaquille O'Neal to come over there as a free agent, the rest was history. They won a championship in 2006. Phil Jackson's never done nothing like that. When it comes to the dynasties with the Bulls, those two three-peats and the one three-peat with the Lakers, you know, LeBron, let me shoot myself, with Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal, he shows he was a guy that could deal with people with huge egos. That's all he did. And the triangle only worked because he had the greatest players in the game. Think about it. He had Scottie Pippen, part of the top 50 of all time. Michael Jordan, did I say more? He had Shaquille O'Neal, you know, one of the greats of all time. He had Kobe Bryant. So that's why the triangle worked. What we have here in New York, Carmelo Anthony and a bunch of, you know, but the guys that they will mop the court on the Knicks. It's a waste. It's just been a joke. And Phil Jackson has been nothing but a joke. And what makes it even more of a joke is that this man doesn't talk to the public. Do you know that he hasn't talked to the media all year? All year. The whole season. The only time he talked was before the season. This is when the season started. Last year. In September, whatever it was. After that, he hasn't talked at all. Matter of fact, there was news today that he's not even going to talk during the offseason. Are you kidding me? You are the president of basketball operations of one of the big-time franchises in the NBA. Believe it or not, the New York Knicks are a pristine franchise in the NBA. They are the most viable franchise in the NBA. I know some people are laughing out there, but they are the most valuable franchise in the NBA. They even higher than the Lakers. Lakers are second. And both teams suck, by the way. But they are a big-time important team in the NBA, believe it or not. Because they're the one of the original teams when the NBA first established in 1946. 46, 47, something like that. I think it was, I think it was the 46-47 season. When they played their first game in Toronto, against the Toronto Huskies at the time, in 1946. Or 47, whatever. It was the 47, 48, but you know what I'm talking about. So, the joke that the Knicks continue, what's going to happen? They won their last game. Carmelo, he did play yesterday in the final game, and he played the first three quarters. He sat out. And then the Knicks fans chanted, "We want Melo, we want Melo." They want to see Melo one more time. The Knicks fans that come to this game, and this is an amazing thing. All these years when we have sucked, we still sell out the Garden. There's very few sports franchises that do that. Very few. That still sell out their sports venue even though they suck. Now, there's a lot of reasons why. You know, it is off 7th Avenue and Broadway. You know, not too far from Times Square. A lot of big-time people, you know, big-time schmucks like to go in there. Like, hey, you know, let's close this deal out in this suite as we watch the Knicks lose another game. Thank you, Bob. Here's another 25 grand. You know, a lot of it is because the Knicks are looked at as like a Broadway play in a sense. In other words, the real fans are really shut out in that arena. The only time you see real fans is way up in the 400 section. The real fans are not down by courtside. And I know Spike Lee is considered a real Knicks fan, but, you know, whatever. He just looks like a mascot, which that's even I shouldn't even put him in that category. But, you know, real fans in all of these team sports have been shut out. It's only the ones who are very wealthy and very bougie that get into these arenas and just see it as something to do. They're not diehard fans like me or people like you that are listening right now. So, I mean, there are diehard fans that go to the games all the time there, but part of the sellouts every time, no matter what they win or lose, is because these bougie people, these celebrities like to show up. And by the way, they don't. It's not like these famous people pay for their tickets in courtside. That's given to them by James Dolan and Knicks management. Good job. Good job. Just to, you know, push their agenda. Oh, look, we have famous people on courtside. Like, I would give a crap. I give a crap what's on the court. I don't care who's in courtside. When I'm at a sporting event, I care what's going on in the game. I could care less about the other stuff. That's why that other stuff is for other times. But anyway, I digress. Bottom line, another season, NBA season gone. Another waste of a time with the Knicks continues. Who the hell knows what's going to happen with the Knicks? God forbid we get a guy with LaVar Ball, who can never shut his mouth up. God forbid we get Lonzo Ball, whatever his name is. I don't want any part of this guy on my team. And that's because his father is such an embarrassment and a joke. Please. I mean, LaVar Ball is talking about, well, you know, he wants his son to play for the Lakers. Shoot, you'd be lucky if your son plays NBA basketball at all. You keep opening your mouth. Because of you opening your mouth saying dumb crap and racist crap, let's keep it real, you're going to make your son drop lower and lower every time you open your damn mouth. Because who the hell wants a part of that dude's father? Which sucks because it goes against his son's abilities. You know, taking away his potential and his to fame. Just because LaVar Ball had no career whatsoever in the NBA because he never got drafted. He sucked in college. He's living out his fame and fantasy through his sons. One of them is the one that's eligible for the NBA draft this year. The other two are still up and coming. One just entered college basketball. The other one's still in high school. What's a billion-dollar contract with his three sons, claiming that, you know, his son Lonzo Ball, his team UCLA lost because the three white guys on his team were slow. Because white guys are considered slow. It's like, this guy is just an embarrassment. And, of course, I wasn't blown up enough because it was a black guy who, by the way, looks half white to me. He is half white, who has a half white son, talking this racist crap that don't get blown up because it's a black guy saying it. But yeah, let that be the other way around. And a white guy said that about black players on the team, and forget about it. There would have been a lynch mob. My point in that is that fair is fair. I don't like racist crap, whether it's black, white, whatever. I treat it consistently. I don't go by, oh, it's a black person, so that should be more intensified than it is if it's an Asian person or if it is a Puerto Rican or whatever. It's stupid. But anyway, I digress. Let's move right along because I only got 19 minutes. And by the way, I'm actually doing a special Bench Woman's Live show tonight. Usually I don't do these. I only do these special edition shows once in a while. I do them every now and then. Like the last time I did one was last year, late last year, I think in November, whatever it was. And I forgot who I did it last with. Usually when I do these special edition of the Benchwarmers live shows, it's usually not, it's not a sports related show at all. It's just purely who that I talked to, that person, whoever I have on at that time on a special edition. Where tomorrow's show is about sports and about entertainment, whoever I have on the show. But this special edition tonight is just strictly for this particular person. I'll be on for like an hour or so, which will be tonight at 8 p.m. Just follow me on Twitter at YankeeMan1973 to find out who that person is, by the way, if you haven't known by now. And follow my Twitter show page, my Benchwarmers Live show page on Twitter at TBWS Podcast, TBWS PODCAST. By the way, there's still 18 minutes to call on this show. If you have any comments or questions, the number to call is 646-716-8041. That's 646-716-8041. And press number 1 if you want me to pick up your call. Now, last but not least, because like I said, I only got 18 minutes, I want to talk about my Yankees. As we speak, the Yankees are 4-4. I don't know what place they're in right now because I don't look at standings this time of year. This is only the second full week of the season. Everyone makes a big deal. Like, it's so stupid. Since we last talked last Thursday, the Yankees lost 2 out of 3 to Baltimore. That series started last Friday. Those games Friday and Saturday were big time bad losses, because those two times they were leading late in games. The bullpen didn't do their job, blowing the leads. But then Sunday came around, they did a 180, and the Orioles were the ones that choked the game at the end, and Aaron Judge was a huge part of that one. So they saved themselves from embarrassment for getting swept by the Orioles. And then Monday came around, and the season opener at home started, which was awesome. Sucks for me because I worked overnight during this time, so I only could see as much as I could. I know with the Yankees, they had an all-time record going back since the beginning of American League Baseball started in the American League in 1901. The Yankees' home record when they opened the home, you know, their home openers at home, whether they opened the season at home or their home opener, doesn't matter. Their record is 60. If I'm not mistaken, it was 66-30, something like that. Some number like that. And the Yankees continued that. Matter of fact, in the last, I think I wrote this down somewhere. I don't know if I did. But I tweeted it out. I gotta look up that tweet. But yeah, the Knicks still on my brain. The Yankees won the home opener, they beat the Rays. Then they had the day off, and then here comes Wednesday's game, which was yesterday. It was a day game. I got to go to the game. Montgomery was pitching. That's one of their prospects they had from the farm system, his first major league start. He didn't do too well in the first inning, gave up 2 runs right away. It was 2-0. Then at one point it was 3-0, and I was like, oh, here we go. They're going to lose while I'm here. This sucks. Then came the fifth inning where the Yankees had a rally, but they didn't get that one hit to get any of those runs home. All those runs they got were basically errors and stuff like that. A couple of runs were walked home, and a collision at first base with Brett Gardner and this guy Ricky Weeks, big time collision. It was funny because Brett Gardner didn't even start the game. And he actually pinch hit for one. I forgot who he pinch hit. I know he pinch hit like a. He pinch hit the shortstop. That not a well known guy. I forgot to do his name, so please forgive me. And Brett Gardner pinch hit for him in a nice hole, and he got a. For some reason, now this is what I don't understand. You have runners at first and third with one out. Okay, at this point, the game I think was tied. It was either tied or the Rays were up 3-2. The Rays, for some reason, draw the infield in. Now, mind you, this is the fifth inning. This is not like the eighth inning or, you know, the ninth where, you know, of course, if the winner comes home for the home team, which would be the Yankees, the game would be over. For some reason, the infield was drawn in. Why was this decision was made by the Rays manager? I have no idea. Because it's stupid. Because Gardner hit the ball right back to the pitcher. Now, mind you, because these idiots were drawing in the infield, there's nobody covering second base because the shortstop is in the infield grass. The second baseman's in the infield grass. When the ball was hit and Gardner has speed, the pitcher, when he caught the ball, turned around to throw the second. No one's there. He had no choice but to throw the first. By the time he threw the first, big-time collision because Weeks was hogging the plate first base. Why? I have no idea. That was weird. And then they both made a collision. Mind you, Weeks looked like he had the worst part of the collision than Gardner, and yet Gardner was the one that was down the longest than Weeks was. But both were taken out of the game. I don't know the condition of Ricky Weeks, but I do know with Brett Gardner, he had like a bruised jaw and a concussion or something, so he immediately took him out of the game because nowadays when it comes to sports now, they don't mess when it comes to concussions, thanks to the NFL for that one. Well, let me rephrase that. Thanks to the lawyers for that one. They scored. The Yankees scored 8 unanswered runs after that. Aaron Judge hit a moonshot right by the Mohegan Sports Bar again, just under it. I mean, he's been on fire lately, Aaron Judge. I think he's hit like 3 home runs, whatever. Then I saw this stupid stat. There's this new stat thing going around. Like, it's bad enough with these analytics, as I call it, analytics. You know, with everything war and whip and all this other garbage. Now there's an actual new thing in baseball with a stat. They go by the speed, the miles per hour of the ball goes off the bat. Like, I give a crap. There actually was a tweet by the Yankees that, oh, my God, the ball that Aaron Judge hit, it was like an RBI single or something during the game, just before he had that moonshot later on in the game. Oh, my God, the ball left his bat at 116 miles per hour. Oh, that's the fastest since the fastest miles per hour stat since we started doing this stat. Like, who cares? Why would I care? Now, what I do care is that shot that Aaron Judge hit that went up the middle for a base hit almost took the pitcher's head off. That's something that should be brought up. He's lucky the guy's still alive. He would have been beheaded the way that ball screamed at his head. He's lucky to get out the way. Now, the home run, okay, to me, you talk about, you know, how far was hit from home plate to the fence. That's a different story. That's been going around for decades. I don't mind that. Okay, that ball went, you know, 430 feet. Okay, that's different. Or 450. Okay, that's interesting. I don't care how fast it left the bat to get over the fence. I don't care. It's stupid. Oh, it was 108 miles an hour. It only took like, you know, 5 seconds. I'm surprised they don't time it, you know. Oh, my God, it only took like 5 seconds from the time the ball left the bat to it went over the fence. Who cares? Is all this stupid, I blame fantasy sports and I blame all these nerd geeky, you know, stat geeks. You know, to me, you know what stats I care about in baseball? Batting average, home runs, RBIs, and on base percentage. That's it. Because the everyday player, that's it. That's all I care about. Those 4 things. Pitcher, I care about wins, losses, ERA, and how many hits he's given up and how many innings he's pitched. So in other words, if the guy pitched in a season, let's say 160 innings, if he's given up more hits than innings pitched, that means he sucked. But if he's pitched way more innings and only allowed lesser hits, if he pitched more innings than hits given up, then he pitched very damn well. Those stats are important to me for a pitcher. Innings pitched, how many hits he's given up in those innings, ERA, wins or losses. I don't care about, you know, what's that garbage? The whip, which is hits and walks and innings pitched. Like, I give a crap. I mean, okay, that, to be fair, if I take back, it is a little more important than the other acronym garbage, BIP and whip, you know, and all the other garbage, whatever, war. At least with whip, I can understand a little more because they put together how many walks and hits given up in his innings pitched. You know, so it makes sense. That at least I could deal with that. But all this war garbage, and all these other acronyms that I can't even remember, BAPIP and all these other garbage. It's a waste of time. It's stupid. It's dumb. Well, to make a long story short, the Yankees did win the game yesterday, 8-3. Was a nice day. Couldn't complain. I went with my lady. Weird weather because it was like light rain. And of course, this is the day I picked to wear my Adidas that I rarely wear that I've had since last year. And of course, when I left, it was not too bad out. And then when I got off the train, of course, it was cloudy and raining. So I was pissed off. Luckily, it wasn't when my suede Pumas out. Well, excuse me, I would have really want to rip somebody's head off. But it was a good game. They scored 8 unanswered runs. The final score, I think, was 8-3 or 8-4, something like that. But the Yankees won. That's the bottom line. They took the series already, but it would be nice if they swept them tonight. The Yankees are going to end the 3-game series against the Rays, which actually they start playing in another 9 minutes or so. And that's a good question. Who they play after that? Let's see. While I'm looking up, I'm actually a little surprised that Ms. V didn't call in. This would be the very first time that she didn't call in at all. I thought maybe there was a chance that she would at least you would hear the lovely voice of Ms. V, but I'm actually surprised. So, you know, I guess she is real busy with the Detroit Lions. No, I don't mean like that when I say it like that, ladies and gentlemen. I mean she's part of that season ticket holder event. With this unveiling of this Lions uniform, which I know she's probably going to talk about tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for About Sex, Sex, and More Sex, which I'll promote very shortly. Okay, Yankees schedule real quick. Schedule. Let's see. Okay. All right, so after today, they'll play a weekend series against the Cardinals. That's cool, the St. Louis Cardinals. And then they go back on the road again. And, of course, it doesn't tell me what the this is only showing me, like, the home schedule, which is not what I want. I want the full schedule at home and on the road, too. Not just, you know, home games. Okay, let's see. Okay, here we go. So 3-game series against the Cardinals here in the Bronx, you know, in Yankee Stadium. Then they face to close the homestand the White Sox, 17th, 18th, 19th. Matter of fact, on the 18th, I'll be there to see the White Sox game. That'll be a night game. Then they go to Pittsburgh next week for the 21st, 22nd, 23rd to face the Pittsburgh Pirates. And then next weekend, is it next weekend? Let's see, Wednesday. No, the weekend series will be in Pittsburgh, and then the following Tuesday after this coming, they'll face the Boston Red Sox. It doesn't show how many games. I don't know if it's 3-game or 4-game series, but they usually always play the Red Sox in April. There was one year they didn't do that, which was surprising, because the Yankees, it seems like they always play the Red Sox in April, and it's always in Boston, and usually the Yankees always have trouble in Boston when it comes to the first month of the season, April. Hopefully the Yankees whip their ass. I noticed with the Red Sox, they have done no better than we have. So it's not like the Red Sox have been running away with the Eastern Division. So far, I mean, it's too early, but my predictions look okay so far. I'm not going to make a big deal. You know, wait a few more months and then, you know, we'll see what happens. Okay, Major League standings. I mean, that's the 16th season. 17, damn it. Here we go. Let's, okay. Speak right now. Now, let me remind you, this is only the second week of the season. The Orioles are in first place, 5-2. The Rays, Red Sox are tied for second at 5-4, game out. The Yankees are in third place, 4-4, a game and a half out. And the Blue Jays, surprisingly, I didn't even realize this, 1-7. And let me say this. A lot of people, I didn't do this, but a lot of people picked the Blue Jays. I picked them last year to win the division, which they did, by the way. No, actually, they didn't. They won the wild card, though. The Red Sox won the division last year by default, because it wasn't because they beat us. It was because Toronto lost, whoever it was, and that's why they won the division. So it wasn't because they beat us at Yankee Stadium, because we beat them, thanks to Mark Teixeira's grand slam. Anyway, Blue Jays 1-7 is a little more surprising than I thought. Now, I don't think the Blue Jays were going to win the division anyway. Even though supposedly they have the best pitching staff in the Eastern Division, I still think, unfortunately, the Red Sox are the better team in this division. I have the Yankees as the second wild card, and I have the Detroit Tigers, Ms. V's team, as the first wild card for the American League. So I think the Yankees are going to be competitive, although they've had some injury bug lately. I mean, Gary Sanchez had a tricep strain, whatever, and he's gone for at least the rest of this month. You know, DD has been on the DL since the WBC tournament. They're one of their big-time prospects, I forgot homeboy's name real quickly. Let me look at this real quickly. His name escapes me, so please forgive me. I know he has to go through Tommy John surgery, which is horrible. Wait, real quickly, let me go to the Bleachers Report app, which I always recommend, by the way. Real quickly, because we only have like 4 minutes left of the show. Matter of fact, 3 minutes and change. So I want to make this real quick. Oh, my God. I just saw this news. Hall of Famer Lou Brock diagnosed with bone cancer. That's horrible news. I'll talk about that more on my own show tomorrow. That's horrible. That's right. More horrible news. What the hell is going on here? Okay. Yankees. Real quickly. Let's see. Before I say goodbye, because I have another show to do an hour, my special edition of the Bench Rollers Live Show. Let's see. Did I get ready for that? Okay, hold on. Of course, this. Hold on. Okay, here we go. Yeah. The Yankees' top pitching prospect is going to have Tommy John surgery. What's his name? He's actually has proven to be have a lot of potential. In fact, his name could be uploaded. It's like, I swear, it's like gremlins are in control right now as we speak. Yeah, James Capolillian, that's his name. He's going to be undergoing Tommy John surgery. He was the Yankees' 2015 first-round pick. He's scheduled to have Tommy John surgery next week, and he will be on the show until at least next season. So we'd be lucky if he comes back in the middle of next season to be able to pitch. So that's with that, and I think that's everything else. All the other stuff I'm going to talk about when it comes to the NBA playoffs, that's going to start this Saturday. I'll talk about that tomorrow on my show, and I'll get all in depth about who's facing who. Stupid thing with Tony Romo and Mark Cuban. You know, Mark Cuban wanted Tony Romo to play an actual NBA game with the Magic, which is freaking asinine. I'll talk about that tomorrow on my show. And among other things, I'll talk about my show, John Madden ripping the Raiders for moving to Las Vegas, et cetera, et cetera. I'll talk about that on my own show, The Bench Rollers Live Show, tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can listen by going to mixer.com/er-owner, mixlr.com/er-owner. I would like to thank everybody for listening tonight. Shout out to Ms. V. Hopefully she's enjoying herself at that exclusive event for the Detroit Lions season ticket holders. Hopefully the new jersey that's unveiled is captivating. You can follow me on Twitter at YankeeMan1973, YankeeMan1973. Follow my Bench Rollers Live Show page, since we're talking about it, at TBWS Podcast, at TBWSPODCAST. And follow Ms. V, the Toilet Lady, on Twitter at Ms. V, the Toilet Lady. That's at, on Twitter, that's at MSV. DATOYLADY. And thank you all for listening. Tomorrow night, don't forget, it's 10 p.m. for all about sex, sex, and more sex, exclusively here on Visa the Talk Radio with Ms. V, the Toy Lady, leading that show. And of course, yours truly, Riding Shotgun. Everybody enjoy their Thursday night. I got to get ready to do my special edition of my Bench Rollers Live Show. And as I always say to y'all on my own show, I'll say it on here. I say to this in the voice of Rocky Balboa's trainer, Mick, ladies and tomatoes, peace. See you tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Visa the Duck Radio for Talk About Sex, Sex, and More Sex. This is Visa the Toilet Lady as the host. And, of course, yours truly at the helm. Well, not at the helm, shotgun. You know what I'm talking about. Bye, everybody.